Welcome back to another edition of the Dog and Duck Show. Today is NBA time. Mark and I are going to be talking about the Athletics top 75 NBA rankings. But before we get into that, Mark, how are you doing, my friend?
Warren, I'm doing great. My day started with breakfast with you, where we talked about everything except sports, and now it's going to end with us recording a podcast about sports. Could not be better.
Yeah. How about a little shout out for Lil Jon's? Some eggs and bacon and classic diner coffee. So thank you, Lil Jon's, for that. And let's talk a little bit dog and duck news before we get into the real meat of the podcast today. So I'm just going to kind of stick with this NBA theme for today and just give a shout out to DeJounte Murray, the pride of Rainier Beach High School in Seattle, went to hometown UW, played a year there, and showed a lot of promise. I know most Husky fans would have loved to have seen him stick around for a little bit longer. Averaged, I think, around 16 points, 5 or 6 rebounds and 5 or 6 assists, and was a second team all conference player at the University of Washington, and then was drafted with the 29th pick by the San Antonio Spurs, and really was a little bit of an afterthought for the first couple years of his career. He bounced in between the developmental leagues and the back end of the roster. He had a couple of moments in his first couple of years where he showed some potential, but the last 2 or 3 years, after him coming back from an ACL injury, we see why this team drafted him. We see why Popovich and the Spurs gave him a pretty big contract. And now he can officially say he's an all-star. He's averaging 20 points a game, 8.3 rebounds, 9.4 assists, and really turning into, I would say, a top 20 player in the NBA right now. So congratulations to DeJounte Murray for, really, I think, exceeding a lot of expectations in his development in this league.
Yeah, hats off to him. I wish he was on a better kind of a more vintage Spurs team to get the credit that he deserves, because unfortunately the team around him is pretty lousy at this time in the Spurs history.
Yep, it's definitely not the best Popovich team that we've seen, but maybe DeJounte becomes the cornerstone for the next, the next run that they take. But that's all I want to share about Husky news right now. Not a whole lot going on, but Mark, give us a breakdown on what's happening in the duck world.
Well, as you know, Warren, my focus this time of the year is always around March Madness. And the Ducks entered, 2 weeks ago, this stretch they had was a chance to either play themselves into the tournament or play themselves out of the tournament. First, they had a huge road game at number 2 Arizona. They lost by 3 points. Then they take on UCLA at home, who was ranked in the top 20. They beat them. Then they host USC, who is in the top 20. They lose by 1 point. So not a terrible showing. You would say, based on those 3 games, they looked like a tournament team, but also disappointing to only come out with 1 win in those 3 games. But the big thing was, prior to that stretch of 3 games, they also lost by 24 points to Arizona State, who's one of the worst teams in the Pac-12. And it's that loss that could spell doom for their chances. Right now, if you look on Joe Lunardi's bracketology, the Ducks find themselves outside of the tournament. Mm-hmm. One of the first few teams outside of the tournament. They play Washington tonight. They play the Cougars this weekend. Those are 2 games that they just have to take care of business and win. And then hopefully they can make a little magic in the Pac-12 tournament and kind of play their way off the bubble and find themselves in the big dance. But it's tenuous times right now for the Oregon men's basketball team.
Well, by the time this podcast is published, the Washington Oregon game will probably be underway, or at least or potentially done. I would not be betting for my Huskies tonight against a desperate Oregon team that has to win to get into the tournament. So we'll leave that alone for now. But let's talk a little bit NBA. So Mark, just as a rehash for our listeners, really in many ways, this podcast, its origin story goes back to you and I being briefly on staff on the same organization for a very, very, very short amount of time. And we had a mutual friendship in JJ Vansel, but during that time we connected, and then the pandemic hit, and ESPN wisely filled the sports vacuum with the ESPN special, The Last Dance, detailing the two three-peats by Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls, and in particular that last season. And out of that, we really started some fun conversations about the greatest players of all time in the NBA, you know, the tiers of the different players and where they belong. And I think when we started getting into that and having these long phone calls, I just remember thinking to myself, finally, I found somebody that I can talk about these things with and not be ashamed of the amount of time that I spend thinking about them. And so when it came to my mind to start a podcast, you were the first person and you were the only person that I called and said, hey, do you want to do this? So for me, anytime that we get a chance to talk about NBA, you know, greats, it feels like a callback to those early moments. So just a couple of weeks ago, the NBA announced its all-time, 75-year anniversary team, the top 75 players in NBA history. They did this at 50. They did this at 25. And this seemed like a pretty historic, type of list to think about who made it, who didn't make it, who was on the top 50 that wasn't on the top 75, that wasn't still in the top 50 among the top 75. So just for, and then kind of corresponding with that, The Athletic ranked their top 75 list, which is what we're going to be talking about today. So first of all, just your initial impressions, Mark, about this NBA, this all NBA 75 team, maybe some memories that you might have about that all 50 team, if you have any recollections about that. But let me just hear your thoughts about this process.
Yeah, I absolutely remember the top 50 team when it got announced, and I remember similarly kind of ceremony prior to the All-Star game of all of those living legends kind of getting introduced and taking the court at the same time. And I was a huge Clyde Drexler fan at the time, and I was stoked that he made the 50th anniversary team. I'm sure I'll talk more about Clyde as this podcast goes on. But so I definitely, Warren, I love lists. I love kind of ranking historical greatness. So before this was even unveiled, I definitely, took 5 minutes and jotted down, okay, if I'm grandfathering in the first 50, who are the 25 guys that I'm adding? And so I eat this stuff up, and I'm thrilled to spend the rest of the podcast talking about it.
All right. Well, just give me your thoughts about that philosophy that you just shared, that do you feel bound to keep the top 50, the original 50 in that list? Or are there more than 25 guys who need to squeeze out some of those guys on the bubble of the top 50 in order to really represent the all-time great 75.
Yeah. So I, when I jotted down the names, I kept the top 50 in just because I wasn't in the frame of mind where I really wanted to parse through it. I think if I were an actual voter in this, I would not feel bound to keep all 75 original names or all 50 original names. But I do think I would want to keep some players from every era. You know, there was some kind of outrage when the list came out of people saying things like, you know, well, Kyrie Irving is just a fundamentally better player than Bob Cousy. Like, look at a video of how Bob Cousy dribbled the ball where he's like, you know, looking at the ball as he's dribbling and look at what Kyrie Irving does on the floor and how anybody could come to the conclusion that Kyrie Irving's not better than Bob Cousy. But I think that misses the point that, like, in his time, Bob Cousy was far and away the best point guard in the league. Mm-hmm. They named an award, the Bob Cousy Award, after him for that reason. Like, and so you're not necessarily trying to say, like, if we took Kyrie Irving in a time machine back to the era of Bob Cousy, how would he do, or vice versa. It's more saying relative to their era, who was a better player, who had a better career. So I would keep those, you know, the Bob Cousys or the George Mikans or the Bill Russells, like, I would keep them all on the list, but there are a few that I would shave off just because, you know, on second look, like, is Robert Parrish, who is like the third or fourth best player of those great Celtics teams in the 80s, like, are we really going to consider him one of the top 75 players when you look at some of the names, you know, Tracy McGrady, for instance, is left off. You know, I never thought much about Robert Parrish as a player, even when I was a kid. So, like, now 25 years removed, I just, you know, and I hate to pick on him, but I look at that name in particular and I'm like, Robert Parrish doesn't really, to me, belong on this list. There are many, many guys that I would put over him, but in general, I think keeping the majority of that original 50 makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, it's funny you're talking about Kyrie Irving and you know, just the difference between the style and the really just the talent and ability that a Bob Cousy had and a Kyrie Irving, and you know, just reminded me of those Uncle Drew commercials,
right?
You know,
right.
And it's just like, I mean, you know, you stick Uncle Drew back in that, you know, Celtics era of you know, NBA basketball, and he would have dribbled circles around all those guys. Yeah. So you're right, and I think that's the fun and the challenge with these lists, that is that you and I are both, as we go through this, we are admittedly going to talk out of both sides of our mouth.
Yes,
100%. We're going to hold a standard for one person, and then we're going to make an exception for another person. And that's just the way that this thing works, is that, you know, it's not just statistical. It's not just nostalgic. It's not just the eye test. It's not just the historical value of what they contributed to the game in their era. It really is a complex culmination that it's hard to really articulate how some of this shakes itself out, but that's why we do this, for the fun of going through the process and realizing that ultimately there's no way you can definitively say that some of these guys are better than others because of the era that they're coming from. But so yeah, let's talk about this. So you know, The Athletic, they had their top 75, and the top 10 I don't think will come as too much of a surprise in terms of who made the list.
Yeah,
maybe some debate on where on the list they rank.
Yeah.
But The Athletic had Michael Jordan at number one, LeBron James at two, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at three, Bill Russell at four, Magic Johnson at five, Wilt Chamberlain at six, Larry Bird at seven, Shaquille O'Neal at 8, Tim Duncan at 9, and Kobe Bryant at number 10.
Yeah.
So, Mark, as you read that list, you know, where on that list do you kind of nod your head, and where on that list do you kind of say, no?
So I think the top 10 makes some sense. And I think I probably would have put them in a similar order. Will Chamberlain is the one that I have the hardest time with, because his numbers make no sense in today's era. You know, he would have a season where he would average 50 points and 25 rebounds a game. But he consistently lost to Bill Russell's teams in the playoffs. And there was kind of an argument that he wasn't really a great teammate, and that, you know, he had some personality issues. And I kind of look at like Shaquille O'Neal, and I think Shaquille O'Neal was the Wilt Chamberlain of his time.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't average the same ridiculous numbers that Wilt Chamberlain did, because he played in an era where there were better centers to compete against night to night, you know? But I think like he actually dominated the game more. Like he had a run where he won 3 NBA titles in a row and was clearly the most dominant basketball player on the planet during that entire stretch. Wilt Chamberlain never had that because of Bill Russell's Celtics. He never had kind of that era. So Chamberlain's the one that I look at. He's 6 on this list. I think you could make an argument that he's underrated. I think you could make an argument that he shouldn't be in the top 10. Like I think he's the one where it's the biggest kind of variation of the rest of these guys. I feel like are all defensible where they are. And especially once you get up into the top 5, it's like, if you're not going to include them somewhere near the top 5, I don't know what you're doing. Like,
yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think that Will Chamberlain argument is a really interesting one, because to me, you compare that to the Bob Cousy argument, and you know, I don't think anybody really believes deep down that Bob Cousy could play in the NBA today and have anything of a successful career. Yeah. But I do think that people believe that Wilt Chamberlain could play today, you know, yeah, and with the different style and training and physical conditioning and all that kind of stuff, could be very, very successful. I think could be a regular all-star. Would he score 50 points a game? No way. I mean, that would never happen. So, you know, like you take a Shaquille O'Neal and you put him in the NBA at the same time as Will Chamberlain, and I think we would all assume that Shaquille O'Neal would be equally dominant with Will Chamberlain. So I think that's the challenge, is that we do have to kind of skew some of those numbers, because he was so ahead of his time in terms of physical giftedness and size that nobody knew what to do with him except for Bill Russell.
Yeah.
And Bill Russell was the ultimate, antidote to the Wilt Chamberlain poison. And I think it's Russell's success against Wilt Chamberlain that puts Bill Russell on this list.
Right.
So that isn't it, you know, and I think that's a fun thing about when you look at some of these guys in the top 10, you know, you've got Wilt and you've got Bill Russell, you've got Magic and you've got Larry, you know, there's kind of those rivals that really helped shape and form. And I mean, so to have Magic at 5, Larry at 7, there's a way in a sense that feels really right, that those guys are kind of within 2 or 3 spots of one another.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I'm looking at, you know, I look down at number 11. I don't know if you caught this. So number 11 is Hakeem Olajuwon. Okay. Quick thought about Hakeem. When Michael Jordan left to play baseball and the league kind of opened up for 2 years, 1994, 1995.
Yeah.
The best players in the league basically were all centers. There was actually a year where 4 of the top 5 vote getters in the MVP balloting were centers, and it was Hakeem, and it was Patrick Ewing and David Robinson and a young Shaquille O'Neal. They were dominating the league. And if you look at Hakeem Olajuwon's back-to-back title runs in 94 and 95, he beats Ewing's Knicks in the finals, and he wins the MVP, and he wins the finals MVP. And then the next year, David Robinson is the league MVP, and he beats Robinson in the Western Conference Finals. And then he goes to the finals, and he sweeps Shaq's Magic team. And so he was playing at this era where it's dominated by centers, and he beats all three of them in the playoffs and outplays all of them pretty emphatically. And if I'm Hakeem Olajuwon and I'm looking at Shaq ahead of me, I beat Shaq in the finals. I outplayed the best centers in the league consistently in the playoffs. And then if you look at, well, who were the centers that Shaq went through when he won his finals? It was guys like Arvydas Sabonis and Rick Smits and Vlade Divac. And, you know, Dikembe Mutombo is probably the best center that he had to go against. But it's like, that's not nearly the caliber of player that Hakeem Olajuwon was beating out during his title run. So if I'm Hakeem Olajuwon, I'm saying I should be ahead of Shaquille O'Neal on this list.
Mm. Wow. You know, you're so right. I mean, it is funny because we think about just how dominant Shaquille O'Neal was. He was, you know, he came into this league as a 19-year-old that just had a size and an athleticism that we had never seen before. I mean, I remember, you know, them doing an interview with Larry Bird, I believe it was, in the NBA playoffs. And he said, you know, the best basketball player in the country is not even in the NBA yet. I mean, just things like that, that the height that Shaquille O'Neal had coming into the league. And then he had all of that charisma and the smile and the media. And I think that plays a lot into how we remember some of these guys. You know, Olajuwon was humble. He was in a smaller market in Houston his whole career. And, you know, I think you're right. I think he has been downgraded from that as a result.
Well, and when they played in the finals, in the 95 finals, there's a great story that Shaq actually tells about playing Hakeem, where Shaq thought, I'm bigger and stronger than this guy. I'm going to, you know, out physical him. And so the first time Shaq goes down to get position, he just sends an elbow right into Hakeem's stomach, you know, and bodies him up to post up. And Hakeem is kind of in his ear saying, oh, that was a nice elbow, big fella. Yeah. And Shaq says the next two or three times down the floor, he's doing something. He's giving him a forearm shiver. He's doing something to kind of like show him his physicality. And every time Hakeem's just basically kind of chuckling at him. And he said it was like 5 minutes into his first finals game and he realized, oh, Hakeem's in my head. Like, I thought I was getting into his head, but he's the one that's in my head. Like, I haven't thrown him off his game at all. Mm-hmm. Like, he's totally comfortable with this. I loved Hakeem Olajuwon during those 2 years run. And I'm not necessarily arguing. I think Shaq, you know, that was early in his career. He did improve over time and was truly a dominant force. I'm just saying, if I was Hakeem, that's definitely the spot on the list that I'd be eyeing.
But like you said, I mean, that was such a unique era because there were so many great centers in the league at that time. And that kind of, at that time, that seemed like that was the recipe for,
yeah,
you know, winning an NBA championship. Was you had to have a top flight center, and then you had to build a team around him. And, you know, I think probably to the New York Knicks' chagrin, the fact that they could never win that NBA championship with Patrick Ewing was very frustrating, because that felt like the formula. And yeah, they weren't. And I mean, let's face it, that's the reason why Sam Bowie got drafted in front of Michael Jordan. Yeah. Was because that was the reigning mentality at that time, was you got to have that big man and then build the rest of the team around him.
And that was still the philosophy when Greg Oden was drafted over Kevin Durant. You know, it was still this kind
of 6'11" Kevin Durant, by the way. I mean, come on. Well, yeah, I mean, and Kevin Durant was 6'11" and probably weighed 119 pounds at that time.
Exactly.
But yeah, the mentality was, hey, you gotta anchor it with the center, and then build from there. All right, so.
Warren, just let me say to that point, it shows you how much the game has changed in that if you look at the recent additions to this team, the 25 guys that were added on, none of them are a true center. The best centers of this past era were somebody like Dwight Howard was not even included on this list, which just goes to show how much the game has changed that we don't even consider centers to be kind of an essential ingredient to a winning basketball team.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, the center position has changed dramatically where, you know, you don't have guys with their back to the basket like they used to. Now, you know, guys that are 6'10", 6'11", 7 feet tall are dribbling the ball and, you know, out on the wing using their athleticism to get points. And so there are very few of those traditional centers still playing in the game. In fact, is it Ayton who plays for the Phoenix Suns?
Right.
You know, I mean, he's one of the few, you know, younger centers that kind of plays that traditional center game because so many of those guys that are 6'11", 7 feet tall now, they're athletic enough and they want to have the ball at the top of the key.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned no centers being added. So let's talk a little bit about some of the new additions to the team since the top 50. Who came in with the guards this time around?
All right. This is, I believe this is in order of when they came into the league. So this is somewhat chronologically. So the guards that were added were Reggie Miller, Gary Payton, Allen Iverson, Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, Ray Allen, Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, James Harden, and Steph Curry. That's a pretty good list.
That's a very good list. You know, I think looking at that list, you know, they all have a great argument. They all make a lot of sense. You've got MVPs there. You've got Hall of Famers. You've got all-time greats. Is there one? I guess for me, the one guy that I feel like is a little bit still on the bubble would be Damian Lillard. I don't know if Damian Lillard has ever been considered the best guard in the NBA in any one given season. One of the best, yes, but the best, I don't think so. And he hasn't gotten that ring yet to kind of justify some of that. His statistics are good, but not otherworldly at this point. Do you have any problem with Damian Lillard being on this list?
So I'm a Oregon native, so I've got a soft spot for any Blazer on the list. So I was also surprised that Lillard made it. I was happy to see him on there. I wasn't necessarily outraged, but it surprised me. Yeah, I think he's the name that I look at there and say, wow, huh? They gave that spot to Lillard. To me, he kind of felt like right on the bubble there. I think. It is in his favor that he has a couple iconic playoff series winning buzzer beaters, including that one that he hit from about half court to eliminate the Thunder a couple of years ago that was in a 50-point game, and then he waves goodbye to the crowd. Like that's an NBA classic moment that will go down in history, and is the type of thing that I think could probably swing a few votes in a situation like this. I think. What strikes me in looking at that list of guards is no Tony Parker, no Manu Ginobili, two of the all-time great San Antonio Spurs. Of course, Tim Duncan, their teammate,
made it on there. But those guys were also the authors of some great playoff moments. And I would have assumed that one of them probably would have gotten in on this list. But I think Damian Lillard probably is the one that grabbed that spot.
Yeah, I mean, when you when you think about some of those great teams, and of course with the Showtime Lakers, you know, you had Magic, Kareem, James Worthy. With the Celtics, you had, you know, Larry, McHale, Parrish, and then with the Spurs, you've got Duncan, kind of in that second phase with after Robinson and his time comes to an end. You've got Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker. And you know, that was Parker was a guy that we talked about when we talked about our NBA tiers, that, you know, he's a guy that I think you know, belongs to be, you know, deserves to be a little bit higher on that list because of what he did and the way that he was able to really fit into the model of his team to help that Spurs team win championships.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, if you're thinking about this list as like you're kind of trying to represent the greatest of NBA history, like I have a son now and I think about things through the rubric of like, if my son gets really into basketball, who am I going to tell him about? And what am I going to tell him? And so somebody like Manu Ginobili, did you know there's a highlight reel on YouTube of Manu Ginobili either dribbling the ball through his opponent's legs or passing the ball through his opponent's legs? Mm-hmm. He did it so many times that there is like an extended, like several minute YouTube video of him just schooling people with that. Like that's the type of thing that like is, you know, goes beyond like the stat sheet of like, I don't really care what Manu Ginobili's stats were. I just know that he was kind of a marvelous magician of sorts to watch. Like that he just kind of played with the eccentricity that was unrivaled. And so, you know, I'm splitting hairs here to try to pick a player. I mean, I'm gonna talk a little more about James Harden later, but like, I'm not gonna be pulling up James Harden YouTube videos to show my son. Like, because there's nothing like intoxicating about the way that he plays. His numbers are jaw-dropping. His, you know, his efficiency and everything is you know what has gotten him on this list and gotten him MVP award and things like that, but like Manu Ginobili lives in my heart in a different way than mm-hmm. somebody like James Harden.
Yeah. Do you feel like, I mean, obviously that some of those magical plays are a part of it, but do you feel like that the fact that the Spurs have kind of been, you know, the lovable underdog small market team, you know, does that increase the nostalgia for you? And has that somehow decreased the value of, you know, their worth in the eyes of this top 75?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that, it certainly does increase the nostalgia. I think if the Spurs, if that same group of players played for the Lakers or the Celtics, I wouldn't feel the same way about them. I think the fact that they were in this kind of one team town of sorts, and that there was something kind of unique about that. I think really what it was is they just ran out of spots, and it was, you had to make some hard choices. And, you know, you mentioned those great trios of the Lakers and the Celtics. Those trios were included intact in the 50th anniversary team, and then they remained intact in the 75th anniversary team. And so it meant that this Spurs trio couldn't be included. It meant that the Warriors trio of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green couldn't be included. So you have Steph Curry and you don't have the other two. And I think that was just kind of the nature of some of those players getting grandfathered in and then not leaving enough room for some of these other teams that kind of had a nucleus of several players.
Agreed. All right, so the guards, I think, is a dynamic, terrific list. Not a lot of controversy there. Now we move on to the forwards. And with the forwards, we've got Dominique Wilkins, Dennis Rodman, Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, Paul Pierce, Dirk Nowitzki, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony, Anthony Davis, Giannis. So, you know, to me, one of the interesting things about this is that Dominique Wilkins was left off the top 50 team. And, you know, you talk about highlights. I mean, he was the human highlight reel. He was one of the preeminent scorers in the league. I think he was a great ambassador for the sport of basketball. He never had that NBA championship moment, which I think is what kept him off that original 50 list unfairly. But it's good to see Dominique Wilkins get onto this list after being, I think, to me, the greatest snub of the top 50 list that came out 25 years ago.
Agreed. Yeah. When your nickname is the human highlight reel, because you unleash better dunks than anybody ever has seen, like, you deserve to be on a list like this. You know, again, going back to like the, what are the YouTube videos I'm going to show my son someday? Dominique Wilkins is on the short list of, like, you're going to pull up the Dominique highlight reel and give that a watch. So, absolutely. I was glad to see him on. And as I look at the rest of this list, I have a hard time complaining about any of them. I was a little surprised that Anthony Davis got on there at this point in his career. That felt a little bit like a projection. Whereas with Giannis, I feel like it's a little more, I mean, he's a two-time MVP and he won a finals MVP. And I feel like that one was a little more deserved. I'm gonna give you two names. Well, I've got two names that I'm kind of thinking about here as, should they have been on here? And I'm curious if you would identify them. Two of these forwards that I kind of have questions about.
Oh, are you asking me to name two?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were about to list two.
But... that was a pregnant pause for our listeners.
Sorry, no, yeah. So, I mean, to me, there's a couple of interesting ones. I agree with Anthony Davis. I have not found a personal love for Anthony Davis as a player. So I'm not super keen on him being on this list. But I think the other two that are interesting to me, number one is Carmelo Anthony. So, you know, the statistics are obviously there. And I think if you're going to include Dominique Wilkins, you have to include Carmelo Anthony, and vice versa. If you're going to include Carmelo Anthony, you have to include Dominique Wilkins, because they're both, you know, dynamic scorers that never were able to translate that into carrying a team to an NBA championship. The difference is that Dominique seems to be universally liked, Carmelo not as much so. So that's I think why there's a surge of enthusiasm when I think about Dominique being onto this list, and not so much with Carmelo. The other interesting one is Dennis Rodman. And, you know, Dennis has got such a unique resume. You know, he won five NBA championships. He was a critical role player with the Detroit Pistons. And I would say that he was this unique weapon that paired perfectly with the Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan Bulls to help them win their NBA championship. But I don't think that there was ever a time in Dennis Rodman's career where he was ever the best player on his team, or really one of the top four forwards in the NBA, you know? So to me, and he was such an enigmatic character, you know, in many ways a caricature. He had all of the bizarre behavior. He had the nickname, the Worm. you know, all that stuff. So he's clearly one of the most memorable basketball players of all time. But I'm not sure if I can fully get on board with him being a top 75 player on this list.
He also was so one-dimensional. Like, you know, he was a defensive specialist and a fantastic rebounder. So I guess a two-dimensional. But on offense, he was a liability. And
he was just a scrapper on offense.
Yeah, he would set screens and he would get offensive rebounds, which had some value. But he was not a threat at all. You didn't have to guard him on that end of the floor. And I think in today's game, he's the classic example of a guy that came along at the right time, because I think in today's game, he would get exposed for that much more. I think teams are much smarter about leaving guys like that open and not guarding them and figuring out ways to kind of filter the defense away from them. But I compare him to a guy like, you know, if Dennis Rodman was basically the third best player on some really good teams, I compare him to somebody like Draymond Green of the Warriors, who has been the third or fourth best player on some really good teams. The difference is Draymond Green is usually the best defensive player on the floor and the best distributor for his team on the offensive end. Frequently, you know, leads the Warriors in assists, frequently is bringing the ball up in crunch time and kind of running the offense, even though he's a power forward. I say this as somebody that's been following the Warriors, and they were 33-6 to start the season with him in the lineup, and they've been 10-13 since he went out with the back injury. I mean, they have just kind of imploded on both ends of the court without him. And I look at him and I say, he's kind of Dennis Rodman 2.0 in that he brings it on the defensive end in the same way Rodman did, where he can guard virtually any player on the floor and he can do all of these disruptive things and he can pull down rebounds and traffic and all this. But he has this creativity on the offensive end that kind of makes him a threat that Rodman was never asked to be. So that's certainly a Warriors lens that I'm looking at it through. But I could be talked into, you know, other players like Pau Gasol kind of being on there for the same reason. Pau Gasol was really the second best player on a couple Lakers teams that won the title. Kobe Bryant doesn't get his last two rings unless he has Pau Gasol. And again, a guy who brought it on both ends of the court, which is something that Rodman just didn't do.
Yeah. And I think that's one of these examples of, you know, talking out of both sides of your mouth, you know, cause it's like, you can say, well, Scottie Pippen or, you know, James Worthy or whoever that is, you know, he was the second or the third best player on his team, but we all know they couldn't have won without it. But then we leave off a guy like Pau Gasol, and it's the exact same scenario. It's just that for whatever reason, there's not that same love for him by, you know, the majority of basketball fans. All right. So, Marcus, we talk about, you know, kind of the guys that made it. We talked a little bit about some of the guys that didn't make it, noticeable absences. You know, we mentioned Tracy McGrady, Vince Carter, Grant Hill, Chris Webber, Dwight Howard, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Pau Gasol, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kyrie Irving. Maybe there could be an argument for some of the Detroit Piston guys like Ben Wallace or even Chauncey Billups, even going back to, you know, the Bad Boys, Joe Dumars.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, out of those notable absences, is there anyone on that list that you would just pound your fist and say, this guy has to be on the list?
That's the thing, Warren, is like, I'm looking at this list and I've made my feelings known about Ginobili and about Draymond Green. I love Klay Thompson. I love Joe Dumars. I mean, I think Joe Dumars guarded Michael Jordan as effectively as any player has in history. That should count for something, right? Like, but all of those guys kind of exist in a relatively similar tier to me. So I don't look at any one of those as,
you know, being fundamentally better than the rest of the guys on that list. I think, you know, there's seven or eight names that to me were all winning players, have all been guys on really good teams that made really big plays when it mattered. And, you know, that means a lot to me. That's why I'm not a huge fan of Carmelo Anthony being on this list, just because I never really felt that way about Carmelo in his professional career. If I'm just kind of saying, like, from a pure talent perspective, it's probably Tracy McGrady, right? Like, he's the guy that feels the most like, at his peak, it seemed like he was one of the three or four best players in the league for, you know, several years in a row. I wouldn't necessarily say that about some of these other guys that I love, like Manu Ginobili or Draymond Green. So McGrady is probably just the, from a pure talent perspective, the one that's the most puzzling, but his career was also, it was relatively short. It was cut short by injuries.
Yeah.
He had relatively few seasons like in his prime. So I'm not even sure that that feels like a grave injustice. I think if I were to summarize Tracy McGrady's career, it's more like a what could have been than a what was.
Yeah. And at some point I'd love to do a list of the what if, you know, what if this guy had not been injured type of list. But, you know, I think on the other end, you've got Vince Carter, who, you know, when he came into the league, you know, he was the high flying UNC heir apparent to Michael Jordan, and Michael kind of almost immediately squelched that and said, no, if there's going to be another guy, it's going to be Kobe Bryant. And, you know, Michael's, obviously Jordan's insight on that bore itself true. But I think what was so interesting about Carter was he came into the league and, you know, he started off as just this athletic wonder that was winning, you know, slam dunk competitions and, you know, putting up really, really good numbers. And then he just kind of stuck around in the league for a really, really long time. And, you know, he was never the best player in the league during the back half. But when you look at his highlights, I mean, here's a guy that was an eight-time NBA All-Star. You know, he was the Rookie of the Year, Slam Dunk Contest, you know, Sportsman of the Year. I mean, that's a pretty legitimate resume when you really look at all the numbers that he did end up putting up. I mean, he scored over 25,000 points, had over 6,000 rebounds, over 4,000 assists. You know, is it just, I guess the question that I have as we kind of evaluate is, how much does it matter that a guy like Tracy McGrady was better for a short amount of time versus a guy like Vince Carter, who was able to accumulate a lot of numbers because he just stuck around for a long time?
Yeah. Well, or Carmelo Anthony, really, I think, made it for the same reason, you know, that Carmelo Anthony has managed to stay in the league. I think he's like 10th all time in scoring. And so if you're that high on the all time scoring list,
you got to be in.
You're going to get a lot of support, you know. So, I would say McGrady at his peak to me sticks out as being a better player than Vince Carter or Carmelo Anthony at their peaks. But I think they're all kind of in that same group, along with Dominique Wilkins, of they're the high scoring kind of forwards that never really came through in the playoffs. And it's kind of a question of to whether that was something with them or something with the teams that they were on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if there were one guy that I felt like from that list that absolutely needs to be on the top 75, for me, it's Tony Parker. You know, I just think he was a guy that did exactly what his team needed him to do in order to keep winning championships. And, you know, if you're going to have the second and third best guy on all these other, you know, great era teams, you've got to have Tony Parker on that list as well. All right. So as we kind of begin to you know, wind this down, looking at that top 75 list, were the guys that you would maybe say are a little bit more on the overrated and those that are maybe on the underrated?
Okay, I'm going to give you two in comparison to one another because they play the same position and I think they illustrate the point for each other. On the underrated side, I'm looking at Reggie Miller. Okay, Reggie Miller came in on this list at number 47. And on the overrated side, I'm saying James Harden, who came in at number 33. Mm-hmm. And here's kind of my take on the two of these guys. Reggie Miller was basically a starter on a playoff team and the best player on a playoff team for like 15 years in a row. The Pacers were always in the playoffs, and not just in the playoffs, but like advancing multiple rounds mm-hmm. in the playoffs. They took Jordan's Bulls to 7 games in the Eastern Conference Finals, as illustrated on The Last Dance, and had a lead, like a double-digit lead in Game 7 of that series. They were the closest team to knocking off Jordan's Bulls, you know, during that run that Jordan had. They lost a 7-game series in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Shaq and Penny Hardaway Orlando Magic, which was another memorable team. Mm-hmm. They made it to the finals and lost a really competitive series to Shaq and Kobe's Lakers. In all of that stretch, like who would you say was Reggie Miller's best teammate? Mm-hmm. Who would you say? Like,
yeah.
Is it Mark Jackson? Is it Jalen Rose?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would have to be Mark Jackson. And he was a great guard. I mean, Mark Jackson was a guy that was a floor general. I mean, I think in many ways Mark Jackson is very comparable to Joe Dumars. Because you know, he's not a guy. There was nothing flashy about him, but he got the job done. And he set up Reggie Miller to be able to do what he did so well. But I think, you know, Reggie Miller, maybe more than anyone else on this list, he's on this list because of his most iconic moments.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason why there are 30 for 30 specials about Reggie Miller.
Yes.
And I think, you know, maybe it was just my age growing up in that era, but it seems like to me that was the most exciting time to be a fan of the NBA was during that era with Jordan, you know, with Hakeem, with Barkley, with Miller, with Patrick Ewing, and that, you know, easy to hate and root against New York Knicks team. And then Reggie Miller was just this guy that, like, he kind of looked awkward. He didn't seem to have the athleticism that some of these guys had, but at the biggest moments on the largest stages, he was able to, you know, put the game away. And so I think Reggie Miller is a great guy to look at because his statistics are really respectable. And especially when you think about what he did and how he paved the way for guys like Steph Curry and, you know, Lillard and those kind of guys. I definitely think Miller needs to be higher on this list. I think he's probably top 35 for me. And then to your point, James Harden has been kind of the ultimate stat stuffer. And, you know, probably Harden and Westbrook are kind of, you know, very similar personalities in that, you know, they're gifted, you know, that that they're great players, but there's something about the way that they play the game that seems to limit their ability to win NBA championships. And that's, I think that's at the end of the day, that's what should determine true greatness, is whether or not they win the championships, but whether or not their game was essential to, or, you know, congruent with an NBA championship game. So that would be my take on that particular argument.
So you mentioned Reggie Miller, that he came through, you know, in these big moments, Madison Square Garden, he scores 25 points in the fourth quarter, or scores what, 8 points in 8 seconds, or, right, you know, he's got these different things. And so James Harden is kind of the opposite of that. Like James Harden, when with the Rockets, had a game where they were playing the Spurs and Kawhi Leonard, who was one of the best players in the league, is out with an injury in a deciding game of the playoff series. And the Rockets lost to the Spurs by 39 points without Kawhi Leonard and with James Harden on the floor. And James Harden scored 10 points and they lost by 39. James Harden had a game against the great Durant Curry Warriors team, where it was game 7 and the Rockets had a chance to close out the series. And they, as a team, missed 27 3-pointers in a row, which is an NBA record of ineptitude that we have never seen before. And James Harden was a big part of that. And so he's totally the opposite of Reggie Miller in the sense that in these huge moments, just time and time again, he hasn't performed. But the biggest thing, you know, I raised the question of who's the best teammate that Reggie Miller ever had. And you said Mark Jackson. No offense to Mark Jackson, but he's not a Hall of Famer. He was a solid above average point guard. But, you know, he made one.
I think he was better than above average. I mean, I think he was, you know, he was kind of in that, you know, make the all-star team, but not an all NBA type of guy.
He made one all-star team in his second year in the league. Mark Jackson did. Bounced around, played on several different teams. I mean, Mark Jackson led the league in assists one year, like a good player. A good player. But think about James Harden and who his teammates have been. Okay, he came up with the Thunder. He was the sixth man on a team with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. Right. He gets traded to Houston. He teams up with Dwight Howard when Dwight Howard was still in his prime and still, you know, the best center in the league. Then he gets teamed up with Chris Paul, and they win 65 games, and they get on the cusp of an NBA title. And then he gets teamed up with Russell Westbrook again. And then he gets traded. He basically quits on Houston. He gets traded to Brooklyn. He gets teamed up with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And then he's dissatisfied in that situation. And so now he's been traded to Philadelphia, where he's with Joel Embiid. I just named like half a dozen future Hall of Famers that James Harden has spent his career playing with. All of those guys are significantly better than Mark Jackson or Jalen Rose or whoever the best players that Reggie Miller is in. And yet it hasn't translated to more playoff success. And so I just look at the two of them and I say, I understand why James Harden is on this list. He has had, you know, certain statistical accomplishments that are unrivaled. I understand all of that. And yet, like, Reggie Miller had a career of simply coming through in the playoffs over and over again. His very last playoff game, when he was kind of old and past his prime, and he scored 27 points in a loss to the defending champion Pistons in 2005. Like, I mean, Reggie was so consistent in that regard. And so that would be my pick for underrated and overrated. I would say Reggie Miller should go up. James Harden should go down. Where do you come down on that question? Is there a particular player that you saw as being overrated or underrated?
Well, we talked a little bit about, Dominique Wilkins, and he came in on this list at 51, I believe. And I think he could have gone a lot higher. And then just a couple spots above him was Kevin McHale, who came in at 49. And, you know, I guess that's where I feel like we're talking out of both sides of our mouth, where we're saying, okay, well, hey, Kevin McHale was the second or third best player on those Celtics teams, but was he the kind of, you know, dominant, dynamic player that a guy like Dominique Wilkins was? I mean, if you had put Dominique Wilkins on those Celtics teams, what would that have, you know, what would that have meant? And, you know, if you'd swap those guys out, yeah, and what would McHale have done without, you know, Bird and Parrish and that whole Celtics aura that they had built during that time? And I'm not hating on McHale. I just think he's a guy that is the benefit of the Celtics mystique, whereas a guy like Dominique Wilkins doesn't even make the top 50 list, and now is kind of being added on as a corrective measure. So, yeah, I mean, I think that would be one that stands out. There's probably a few others. And by the way, Mark, so there is a difference between the official All-NBA 75 team and then this Athletic articles, yeah, ranking. And just as a point of correction, Tracy McGrady did come in on this list at 55. Dwight Howard came in at 56. Yep. And I think Dennis Rodman is at 62. So below a couple of those other guys. Chris Webber also is on the list at 65, whereas he didn't make it on the other list. Lillard's at 68. And then, one other guy that I'll say I think is underrated looking at this list is Alex English. So Alex English ranks number 71 on this All-NBA 75 list. And I heard this a while back, and it blew my mind when I heard this. But did you know that Alex English, it was the top scorer of the 1980s? Nobody scored more points in the 1980s than Alex English.
Wow. That's a great stat.
So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. I mean, yep, you're talking about Kareem, you're talking about Jordan, you're talking about, you know, Larry Bird, some of the greatest players. And obviously when they started and when they finished, that plays a part. But Alex English is the number one scorer in the decade of the 1980s. And I think he's kind of like a Tony Parker guy in that I think being in that smaller market, he never got the recognition, yeah, that he really deserved.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think and those Denver teams were also so high octane. They scored so many more points than everybody else because of the pace that they played, that you also didn't know exactly, you know, how to interpret the data sometimes. It was like, you know, they're scoring 140 points in a game or something like that. And it was like, how much of that is somebody like Alex English being a magnificent scorer, which he clearly was, and how much of that is just the style of play that they played with?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. But I think, you know, nobody punishes the you know, the Los Angeles Lakers Showtime,
right,
era for their up and down approach to the game. So, you know, one has a flashy name and a memorable superstar. The other is in a small market and it's labeled a gimmick, you know, and I think that's the unfortunate thing about some of this, you know. And then Mark, a few names that we both personally love that didn't make it on this list. Couple of our favorite old school Warriors, Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, Chris Mullin. Do you think any of those guys belong in a list like this?
Yeah, you know, I don't. Kevin Johnson of the Suns is another guy I put in that category of memorable player, really dynamic, had some good years, had some good moments, but I mean, this list is, it's not the same as the Hall of Fame. They're basically taking the Hall of Fame and they're trimming off names, which is a hard thing to do. And so there's going to be guys that, you know, were memorably good that just weren't quite good enough to make it. And I think that's okay.
All right, I got three more questions before we wrap this thing up. So the first one is, we've talked a little bit about Westbrook, and we've talked about Harden. These are guys that belong on the list because of what they've done individually, the statistics that they've amassed. How does the story change if one of those guys wins an NBA championship in, you know, a way that they're seen as the chief contributor to that NBA championship? So assuming that they're the MVP or the leading scorer or something like that, how does it change the narrative for this list if James Harden carries the 76ers to an NBA championship?
Well, I think you look at somebody like Kevin Garnett, who I can't remember exactly where Garnett is, but I think he's in the top 20 on this list. And, you know, Garnett spent most of his career in Minnesota as the best player on kind of mediocre teams. And then later in his career, he gets traded to Boston. He teams up with Paul Pierce, who'd also been on his share of mediocre teams, and Ray Allen, who'd been on some mediocre teams. And you've got kind of these three aging all-stars that all kind of come together at the right time of their career, and they have a dominant season, and they win a title. They almost win another one. And all three of those guys are now in the Hall of Fame. They're all three on this 75 list. And Kevin Garnett is in the top 20 of this list. And I don't think I don't think he would be anywhere close to number 17 if he hadn't had those few years in Boston, where he's winning a title and he's playing for another one. And I'm not even sure that Paul Pierce and Ray Allen make this list if they don't have that run. So I think it can absolutely change the narrative. If James Harden has a phenomenal playoff run for the Sixers, I will have to eat my words and I'll have to say, you know what? Harden came through in a way that I did not think he was capable of, and I will give him credit on this podcast. But until that happens, I would say he's overrated at 33.
Yeah. All right. So the last couple questions are somewhat similar. So when we think about the current and the future, the current players and the future of the NBA, if you go back to that all NBA 50 year anniversary list, one guy that made that list was Shaquille O'Neal. He had only played at that time 4 years, but it felt like a nod to the fact that even though he'd only been in the league at that time for 4 years, he was clearly the most dominant center in the NBA that looked like the future of the NBA. And I think he lived up to that billing, obviously, with a top 10 ranking. But, you know, when you look at that, you go, okay, well, what are some of the current NBA players who have maybe been in the league for the same window of time, 4 or 5 years, something like that, that even though we anticipate that there's lots of basketball ahead of them, are there any of those guys that need to be on this list right now?
So I think that you think back to that Shaq making it in 1997, and he had been in the finals in 1995. Mm-hmm. You know, that team, they did get swept, as I pointed out, by Hakeem's Rockets, but they made the finals. They actually beat Jordan and the Bulls in a playoff series. They were the only team basically from 1991 to 1998 that beat Jordan in a playoff series. So like Shaq had done something in the playoffs that was really significant. And that's, I think, what helped to kind of validate his place on the list. I think that's why Giannis made it. And I think that's why Anthony Davis made it, because they've won titles in the last 2 years. And in Giannis's case, he's won multiple MVP awards and he won a finals MVP. And he had a, you know, one of the most epic finals runs that we've ever seen. Anthony Davis was really, really good for the Lakers in their title run the year before. So I think those were the two kind of the Shaq picks, the guys of like, we know their career is just kind of coming into focus, but like we're giving them the stamp of approval. I think there's a next tier of guys, and Nikola Jokic would be in that company. Luka Doncic would be in that company. Joel Embiid, you know, Devin Booker, Trae Young, you keep going. Like, I think that's a whole class of guys where it's like, we still need to see something. And I think it's okay that they were left off. I think I could see all five of those guys playing their way onto the 100th anniversary team in 25 years. Like, I think, but I think in each of those cases, like Nikola Jokic has an MVP award. He very well could win another one this year. He's having that kind of phenomenal season. But we need to see him, you know, carry the Nuggets at least to the finals. We need to see Luka carry the Mavericks to the finals. Or something of that nature to really kind of start thinking about them in the way that we were thinking about Shaq, you know, in the mid 90s, where he had already done that, I think, in like his second or third year in the league.
Yeah. And when you say we need to see that, you're saying if we're going to give him a fast pass to the 75 now,
yeah,
that's what we needed to see.
Yeah, yeah, I should have used the past tense there. I think they'll have plenty of time to amass an entire career that would be deserving of this kind of honor the next time it comes around. But I think to give it to him after 3 or 4 years in the league, you have to really do something extraordinary, and I think that requires some sort of major success in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that the inclusion of Giannis is, to me, the easiest pick out of all those. We both kind of expressed that Anthony Davis doesn't do a lot to raise the meter for us. But, you know, speaking of Giannis, you know, out of the guys that are currently on that top 75 list now and are still in their career, who do you think has the greatest chance to crack the top 10 by the time their career is over?
Wow. I mean, Giannis is very early on in his career. And I mean, do you remember exactly where he was? I want to say he was somewhere near the top 25. He was 24. On this list. And if you look at him, you know, that's with one title under his belt already. If he wins another title, you know, he's going to leapfrog it, you know, even higher. So he's certainly the one that I would say, I guess if I'm buying stock in somebody on this list to jump into the top 10, I'd have to buy it in Giannis. I do think there's an outside shot for Steph Curry. Steph Curry is sitting at 15. And I think he is demonstrating, you know, if you saw the All-Star game where he made 16 threes and scored 50 points, like he's demonstrating that he's still very much in the prime of his career. And if he can extend that prime for another couple seasons and the Warriors can keep a solid roster around him, you know, maybe he could win another title and vault himself. Because I think one more title without Kevin Durant would really change the legacy around Steph Curry in a way where we'd have to start kind of considering him, you know, should he be ahead of Kevin Durant? Kevin Durant is ahead of him on this list at 13. I'm not sure I totally understand that because Steph experienced, you know, just as much success basically without Durant as he did with him. So I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, the guy that's closest to that top 10 that's still actively actively playing is Kevin Durant. And, you know, he's on, you know, a Nets team that has a lot of talent that could, you know, potentially make a deep run into the playoffs this year, maybe even win an NBA championship or two before it's done. But the challenge here is not so much to me as when we think about what these guys are doing and what they could do, the challenge is not so much about them moving up. It's about how do we move anybody ahead of them down? And, right. You know, at sitting at number 10 on this list is Kobe Bryant.
Right.
You know, it's like, are you really going to move Kobe Bryant down any further on this list? That feels sacrilegious when you start thinking that, but that's what it's going to take. I mean, for a Steph Curry to bust into this top 10 list, either one of two things is either going to happen. Either we totally rethink our philosophy and we get rid of an old timer like Bill Russell or Wilt Chamberlain, or we have to say, hey, at the end of the day, I think Steph Curry is a better basketball player than Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, in this modern NBA, maybe that's true, but that's a hard thing to sell.
I don't think I'm the world's biggest Steph Curry fan, admittedly. Like, I think, I don't think I could make that argument right now that Steph has had a better career than Kobe. I do think if the Warriors win another title, I think that shifts a little bit because, you know, Kobe won three titles playing with Shaquille O'Neal when Shaquille O'Neal was the best player in the league.
Yeah.
Curry won two of his titles playing with Kevin Durant when Kevin Durant was one of the short list of the best players in the league, as was Curry. And then Kobe won two titles without Shaq, and this would be two titles that Curry would have won without Durant. There's also the 73 win season where they lost in a game seven to a superhuman LeBron that gets thrown in there as part of, you know, I still think that that's a merit to Curry that he was the best player on the best regular season team in history. And then you have all of just the record setting shooting numbers that he has just torched the record book in every way when it comes to 3-point shooting. I think it becomes a more interesting debate. I'm not necessarily sure that like cinches it in any way. And a lot of that is because in our culture, we just tend to kind of count up rings and we say, you know, well, Kobe has five rings. Duncan has five rings. You can't put Curry ahead of them with four, except for Shaq has four and Shaq is ahead of both of them. So I think.
And Will Chamberlain. Yeah.
Has one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe two. Yeah. So I think there's got to be more. Whereas with Kevin Durant, if Kevin Durant wins a title, first of all, I don't see Kevin Durant winning a title in Brooklyn the way they're currently constructed. I think that team, by losing James Harden, has become much less of a title contender. But if he wins one more title, does that vault him into the top 10 when he joined a 73 win Warriors team at their peak for his first two titles? You know, like to me, I find Kevin Durant at 13 to just be a little bit high based on the fact that his best accomplishments came when he joined the best team in the league.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the argument for Kevin Durant is that he has been the preeminent offensive weapon of, you know, the last 15 years, and he has won a couple of titles. So I think that's, in summary, that's kind of the way that you capture Kevin Durant. But the reason why Durant is at 13, LeBron James is at 2, is because it has not been proven that Durant can do it without a Steph Curry type of, you know, surrounding team.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think if Durant can, similar to Curry, I think either one of those guys, if they could win another championship or two, then the argument for them being in the top 10 changes dramatically, because we know that they're going to keep putting up statistics. They're going to keep scoring. That's what they do. The NBA is geared to allow that to happen now. The, you know, sports medicine has been geared to allow that to continue for longer amounts of time. So we're only going to see more and more records. I mean, by the time Curry retires, I mean, he will have demolished every three-point shooting record that has ever been, you know, created until somebody else comes along behind him. But, you know, that's in great part because the game has changed and because, you know, the ability to stay in the game is much greater than it once was.
Can I give you one stat? Can you humor me with one stat as it relates to Kevin Durant and Steph Curry here, Warren?
I would love to hear one stat.
So they played together for 3 years. I'm just looking at regular season numbers, but just looking at points per game, I think most people would assume Kevin Durant scored more than Steph Curry per game during the time they were together. Their first year together, Steph Curry averaged 25.3, Kevin Durant 25.1, virtually identical, slight edge to Steph. Their next year together, they both averaged 26.4 points per game. So they were exactly identical their second year together. Their third year together, third and final year together, Steph averaged 27.3, Durant averaged 26. So again, almost identical, slight edge to Steph. In each of those 3 years, Steph had a more efficient shooting percentage from the field. So I look at that, again, this is as a Warrior fan who watched the Warriors dominate without Durant. They added Durant. There were stretches where they played without Curry and they turned into kind of an average team. There were stretches they played without Durant and I think they went 31-1 during one stretch without Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, and I look at the numbers where they're step for step in terms of their scoring, and I don't see any sort of objective argument that says Kevin Durant is a better basketball player than Steph Curry, because when we saw him play on the same team for 3 years, they scored at exactly the same clip and Steph did it slightly more efficiently.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't argue with that. It comes down to the fact that their style is so different and their physical makeup is so different that, you know, it's kind of like, what do you value more? Do you value that 6'11" frame that can move like very few people that size have ever been able to move? Or do you value the way that Steph Curry has really revolutionized the game and is able to shoot at an efficiency that is just unheard of? And I think, you know, where you land on that really kind of says whether or not you favor him as the preferred player. And obviously, I think for Steph Curry, it took him a few years in the NBA to kind of begin to gain that notoriety. Yeah. Whereas Durant stepped into it from day one. And that may be the very difference between the two in terms of why their legacy is similar, but not, you know, but Durant still has that edge.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think there's been a bit of Warriors fatigue, or there was a bit of Warriors fatigue that seemed to work against
Curry as well over time.
Yeah, I don't know about, I mean, I do think that there were people that were ready to see another team win, but I don't think that there, I don't think there's a lot of Steph Curry fatigue. So, you know, I mean, last year when Curry went on that tear where he was just, you know, putting up, it seemed like 40 points a night. I don't think anybody was like, oh, Jan, it, you know, I'm sick of hearing about Steph Curry. We were all enraptured by that. So, you know, I don't think that there's any negativity. I think if there's ever any negativity, it's probably more towards Kevin Durant, because it feels like Durant's should be so much better than Curry.
That's true.
And he's not. And so I think that's kind of the negative, I think, on Durant's part is, you know, you should be the best because you can do things that nobody else can do. But hey, we've gone on for quite a while. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. Mark, if you were to say just, you know, one player that you think is going to be the, you know, the most exciting player that we'll, you know, we'll be talking about and arguing about 25 years from now from the current crop, is there anybody that you're just like, this is the guy that I want to see him have the fullest career possible?
Well, I mean, there's several, but one guy that we haven't really touched on yet, but he shares a name with my son, so I should mention him, and that's Luka Doncic. I think he has not even won a playoff series yet. So in terms of, like, there is much to still be discovered with him. That's the case, you know, unlike Giannis, who's already won a title, you know, Luka's still waiting for that first playoff series, but boy, does he have all the tools and seems to only be scratching the surface of what his talent can do. And is absolutely a guy that I think would be included on a similar list in 25 years. So I await with great anticipation what the next few years are in store for him.
I agree. He's definitely one of my favorite younger players in this league. I've got some personal fears that he's not going to be able to hold up physically in this league, but that may be totally unjustified, but it'll be interesting to see if he could have a career similar to a Dirk Nowitzki, who was dominant for many, many years, had that run to be able to validate his legacy, and, you know, really retired with a tremendous level of respect. I think that's a wonderful template for a guy like Luka. So I'll be cheering for him. But let's go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you guys for listening to the show. And stick around. We got more content and things to talk about in the weeks ahead. But for all my dog fans out there, go Dogs.
And for all my Duck fans, go Ducks.